Blog Talk Radio.
Global Village. Get ready as we explore the expansiveness of human consciousness, discuss mystical experiences, and chat with intriguing guests on the unexplained, the mystical, and the supernatural. Remember to call in with your questions live on air, because Dr. Douglas is one of those rare individuals, like Edgar Cayce, Paul Solomon, and Ross Peterson, who found a way to access an energetic merge point where all consciousness and knowledge is shared. Scientists are now calling this the quantum field. So relax, listen in, and let's journey through the Global Village.
Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Douglas James Cottrell, and my good friend and co-host, Doug Bentley, is standing by. It is a cold and wintry time here, and people are dropping their phones, handling their phones, and you'll hear those little noises in the background here as we warm up wherever we might be and try not to handle our phones too much. And so when you call in, be careful, because when you move that phone around or when you handle it, it picks it up, and it's right here live and on the air. This is the 24th of February, and it's my wedding anniversary. My wife is in heaven tonight, and I've been thinking about her all day today, as well as the kids have been, as a matter of fact. And we've been sharing some memories by sending me a little, I'd say texts with photographs of times gone by. And it's really interesting to see how your life can go by so quickly. And, you know, the decades slip by, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of marriage go by real fast. And so I'm dedicating the show to my lovely wife. Her name is or was Karen Louise Kathleen Cottrell. And her maiden name was Paquette. And I met her when I was a young man in my high school days, and we became high school sweethearts, and we progressed from there, and it was a life of destiny. She was a very brave and wonderful, talented woman who put up with me for all those years in our marriage. We have three adult children alive, and Sherry is our oldest child, and she's in heaven right now, but and all the kids are like you know, I think the youngest one's pushing 50, is about 48 or 9. And so the other two are in their 50s. We have a couple of wonderful grandkids, Chloe and Riker. And that was our greatest gift to the world, is to put the family out there and put the family together. So as I think of all those wonderful times that we had, and some of those times weren't so nice, some of those times were difficult, pinched or tight, that was a warning my mentor Ross Peterson told me, but in my future life, I was talking to him when I was about 24, and he said, oh, you know, you'll survive. There'll be times that'll be pinched and tight. Well, it felt a lot more like wrestling with a grizzly bear sometimes than pinched or tight, but somehow Karen stuck it out with me and put up with me, and God bless her in the heavens above. And so I'm dedicating the show to Karen Louise Cottrell. And, you know, may her memory live on forever, certainly in my mind, in my life, and that of our children and grandchildren. A wonderful, wonderful person who took care of our daughter, Sherry Ann, for all those years that Sherry came home. She was in an institution when she was from the ages of 2.5 until 6.5. Broke our hearts that she was in the institution when they told us, meaning the medical authorities, nothing else could be done. Put her in the institution. She'll be taken care of, and you carry on with the rest of your lives. Never, ever, 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 never, ever put your child in the hands of paid employees to take care of a child, especially a vulnerable one, because paid people don't really take care of your child and your relative, your mom and dad, your grandpa and grandpa, as well as you could. So with that, Karen took over when Sherry came home, and through that process of dealing with Ross Peterson and him giving us alternatives and information, Sherry lived to be 38 years of age. When she was in the institution, her life expectancy was somewhere between 8, 9, 10, 11 years of age. And, well, Sherry was a trooper, and she bucked the system and managed to survive and hang on until mom and dad, well, mostly dad, got wise enough and informed enough through that wonderful, amazing information that Ross Peterson gave us in his meditative state, what I call a quantum meditation now, and hung on there until we could get her home. And because of that, my friends, because of Sherry's sacrifice and time in the institution, because Karen many, 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 many times was up with her all night long and just devoted to Sherry like any mummy would be, but, you know, she was over the top. She should have got the Congressional Medal of Honor or whatever medal for being a great mummy. Because of that, we're talking tonight. That's right. We're talking because of that episode in my life that had me change, shift gears, if you will, from being a newspaper pressman back at the Toronto Star days, Canada's largest newspaper, and allowed me to investigate this amazing world in the heavens above, and explore that consciousness, that soul's consciousness, that spiritual aspect that we all have within us. Some of us are awake, some of us are asleep, and some of us are in slumber, and some of us are waking up. But with the war in Ukraine coming closer to exploding into World War III, and uncertainty in the Middle East and everywhere else, there seems to be a spiritual awakening or a revival. And people are now, as it's been reported lately in the news, especially young people in colleges and I guess universities, are now just recently, this is like, you know, almost breaking news, they're turning to revival, and they're turning to come together in revival settings where they are mostly, I think these are Christian organizations, but they are coming together en masse. And they're attempting to understand the meaning of coming together. So when God draws near in a revival meeting, some people say the soul is turned inside out. One spirit is suddenly confronted with just how perhaps off the mark people have been. When Isaiah drew near to God, conviction of sin, which he had never before known, suddenly erupted from within his heart, and he became saved, I guess is the word. Revival happens when God's people are prepared. It happens when we are ready for it. You have to be sort of provoked, elbowed. A cosmic nudge has to occur. That's what happened to me when Sherry was in the institution and we kept wondering, is there anything that could be done? Of course, all the people that we knew were telling us all kinds of things, and some of them were far reaching and off the wall as to why this was happening in our life, well-meaning though they might have been. It was quite sometimes cruel for what they said. But that cosmic nudge had me go and look about and read about Edgar Cayce first. I'd never heard of him before. I was in the press room one day, and my friend Bill O'Shea gave me that book, There Is a River, by Thomas Thurgood. I might say his name wrong, pardon me. And I read that cover to cover, and I thought, my God, there really is a source of information of finding out if something could be done for Sherry. Never, ever stopping, always looking for alternatives, always having those questions in your mind that are God questions. You know, only the heavens above can answer them, or you can only get them from a divine source. If you keep them in the forefront of your mind and you keep an open mind and you kind of quietly keep searching, you will find an answer. And that's what I found when reading that book that night. Put me on this course that allowed me to find what other dimensions above and other heavens above were all about. And as we do that, there's sort of a revival moment, you know. I remember reaching out and pointing up in the air and saying, there really is a God out there. Prior to that, I had given up. I thought, how could God let this happen to a little child like Sherry? I didn't understand the rules and what life and spiritual, let's say call it spiritual existence or reasoning or law is all about. But I do a little bit better now. Revival often begins when people are coming into some deep conviction, and or they're crying out in the confusion and in the darkness, and they're asking, God, 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 please help me. That's what's happening now, I believe, in what is going on in these various places. You know, there are, if you can look it up, there's a gigantic Christian revival, draws thousands in an Ashbury revival, which is in Kentucky, I believe. And the Asbury University students tell emotional stories about how they're regaining their faith. Now, that faith was always there. Perhaps it was buried under some doubt. Perhaps it was in a shadow somewhere. Perhaps it was not explained, and people were, you know, looking, grasping, trying to find some truth somewhere. Younger people are on the internet all the time. They have internet watches. They have devices like phones and other things, iPads. And, of course, they have their main computer. And they have, wherever they are, Wi-Fi feeding them information constantly. A lot of it's bogus stuff. This is the great Satan out there on the internet. And what I mean by bogus stuff, I mean deceit, lies, propaganda, scary stuff. Conspiracy theories, some that might be true, scary, but most of them are not true. And younger people are getting bombarded with this. These people that I'm talking about in college and universities, they have not ever, ever, never had the internet with them. They've never, ever been without the internet. So they're bombarded with this 24/7. I'm a little older. I can set my cell phone down and I can walk away from it. And I can leave it there, shut off all day Saturday. That, my friends, is a test. If you cannot do that, you are addicted like anyone else that has an addiction, whether it's smoking, drugs, gambling, sex, power, violence, whatever it is. If you're addicted to something, if you can't set that cell phone down and walk away from it, well, the devil's got you, so to speak. Don't quote me on that. I don't want anybody sending me nasty emails saying, Douglas, you know, if it wasn't for the internet, we wouldn't be listening to you on the blog talk, and we wouldn't be hearing, you know, all these things from around the world that are amazing. Google, the God of Google, as we like to say, knows everything, is everywhere. You can't see him, you can't touch him, but ghouls out there. So there is another deity out there that we won't go down that road, but we'll just say the God of Google knows everything and can find anything out you like. Of course, there's other ones out there as well, other search engines. But the point being is that right now, these children are being bombarded with things, these young adults, and perhaps these people exploring middle age. This is where I'm coming into the world now because of my experiences that went on Sherry when she was just a baby. And Karen and I had to get to that point where we had to make that decision to put her in an institution. And we cried all the way home. And it was like a 200-kilometer drive home from where she was, housed. Because it wasn't a home. It was a terrible, terrible, terrible place. But that was the alternative to all, that was the option. All the authorities at the time, relatives, physicians, medical people, we went to see all the medical experts around, and they were all testing, giving her tests and doing stupid stuff. By that, I mean putting pins in her feet and trying to tell us what her mental conditions were and intelligence level was. However, there is always hope. We found there were people called patterning, and this is where you took people who had some brain damage, and you would move their arms and legs as if they were crawling or swimming, and doing it repetitiously, the brain would retrain itself. That was amazing. How come you hadn't heard about that? How come so-and-so didn't tell us about that? As it turned out, Sherry's problem was basically when she was born, the bones in her neck were out of place, and that's why she was having convulsions. Dr. Don Vigiani, a famous chiropractor in Toronto, gave her adjustments in her neck when she came home. No more convulsions. Oh, my God, 4 years in an institution having convulsions and high doses of phenobarbital and Vival, when all it was the bones in her neck were placing pressures on her spinal cord and that she's having convulsions. Why didn't somebody tell me that? Well, again, there was a time and a place and a system and situations in the world that had to happen in order for you and I to talk today, my friends. And that's what's going on right now. There are people in these revival meetings who have suffered, and they are suffering with great pain and great difficulty, and they're asking the same questions. Is there a God out there? Why is God allowing this war in Ukraine to go on? And all these people, children, being killed. Why, oh, why would God allow an earthquake to go on in Turkey and kill 45,000 people in a minute? How can that be? Well, I'm not going to try to address those questions to you tonight, my friends. We know that there is a process, there is a spiritual purpose to everything. And once you got to that point of understanding there is a process, there are rules, there is a purpose, then we can kind of dissect and take apart the experiences we have in the world and lead us to this point that we're coming to. People are crying out right now. They're coming to groups of people and having revival-type religious ceremonies. They're looking to God to fill them up with relief, to allow their minds to be peaceful, to allow their hearts to calm, to be filled up with that spirit, that love, that energy, I call it virtue, that they are at peace. Peace is the greatest thing you can have and acquire. And if you can keep your peace in all of your life, if you can manage to control yourself all of your life, and if you can manage not to have too many regrets, or if you can avoid having regrets, you lived a pretty much a perfect life without regrets. But that means a lot of effort and work and wisdom and all kinds of preparatory things have had to happen to a person who is waking up. Their slumber is over, and they're waking up to the reality of the world. That's what's going on in these revival meetings. That's what's happening right now as you listen to my voice. And as we go out into the world, furthering with this information, this wake-up, it's to have people reach out and to be filled up with this virtue energy, this knowledge, this force, this life force that in the good book is called virtue. It has many other names because the energy in different cultures and different languages has been over time given some name. But in the biblical sense, in the best term that I could find, it's called virtue. A super human, supernatural intelligence. It's in that fourth dimension. It's in the heavens above. It has no time. It has no limits. It can go wherever it desires to go. It knows what to do instinctively. It's the creative force, and we can call it God Almighty. As we move through this time, the question tonight is, with the war closing in and World War III around the corner, somebody said that they've moved the doomsday clock up to 90 seconds away from midnight. Can we do something about it? I think so. Getting people together and praying is the first step. Prayer is not a passive state of mind. It is a very active and powerful spiritual state. And as we learn to pray and come together en masse, the greater the masses of people, the greater the similarity in the prayer, the greater the force, the energy, that powerful, creative, wonderful energy we call love can manifest. And there is no, you know, there's no limits to love. When you have love and you apply love knowingly, you can accomplish anything. Most importantly, you don't let the darkness, the naysayers, the despair, and the deceit come into your world, come into your life. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back with more on revival meetings occurring in this time of moral distress and national depression. And we'll answer the question why right back after this.
Did you know that Dr. Douglas Cottrell has several other weekly channels where you can participate? Check out his Sunday International Spiritual Healing Service on Zoom, plus a Wednesday night Zoom community gathering. And you might also enjoy the Wake Up Podcast exploring human consciousness, awareness, and intuition with Dr. Douglas and co-host Les Hubert. Just go to douglasjamescottrell.com and message us on the contact page to add your name to the Zoom links of your choice. The Douglas James Cottrell website is where you can learn much more about this amazing man and his journey through a lifetime of spiritual prophecy. The book Secrets of Life answers questions everyone has about the physical versus the spiritual world, why you are here in the world right now, karma, psychic abilities, reincarnation, prayer, and much more about universal laws. This book is essential for those who really desire to follow the path of the divine to soul perfection. Douglas has been chosen to provide you with a keen insight into the purpose of life's journey. Best-selling author Robert Appel says, "The least you can expect from Dr. Cottrell's work is that it will change your life." Go to douglasjamescottrell.com and click on Shop for Secrets of Life and all of his books and learning materials. Every so often, an individual appears who can demonstrate the ability to access the dimension known as the Akashic Field. Dr. Douglas James Cottrell is one such individual. The field is like a celestial library of all our thoughts and actions since the dawn of time. Science is demonstrating that through this energetic field, our minds are connected to one another despite our perception that we're all separate. This is why the great religions of the world teach respect, compassion, and tolerance. They depict the field as the book of life, the source of inventions, inspiration, and insight. In the book, Conversations with the Akashic Field, Dr. Cottrell offers you practical advice from the Akashic Field so you may live a life of peace and prosperity. Go to douglasjamescottrell.com and click on Shop. There you'll find books, meditation, and other spiritual advancement materials.
We understand people may have strong opinions that are different than our own. So join us and call in with questions and comments as we attempt to explore the unlimited human consciousness.
And now, back to the Global Village with Dr. Gunther James Cottrell.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. We're having a couple of technical difficulties here. We trust you can hear me a little better now. Thank you to our producer, Paul, who's stepped up. Doug, welcome to the show tonight. I wonder if you're out there in the woods, out there in the woods in the Wonderland, how things wherever you are in the world. How's it going?
It's going well. It's dark now, but it's going well, yes. It's going down to 17 below tonight, but no snow, which is good. So
now, everybody should
I'm
know
warm
that
in here where I'm living, so that's I'm very comfortable. And I get the opportunity to look out and see the sun. Today the sun was shining bright and shining on the snow, and it was very beautiful. So,
and
so
people should know 17, at 17 below Celsius you're talking about.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
That's, my friends, at 17 degrees below zero. And, you know, that's amazing. I think where we are is five or six degrees. But anyway, I've been talking to people all day long who are in Spain, Central America, and at places that were much warmer, Arizona and whatnot. And, you know, I'm thinking, oh, my God, here we are. You know, what are we doing here, Doc? We're having up here in the North Pole. Didn't see Santa Claus going by lately, but, you know, George Carlin once asked me that. He said, why would, he's from New York, and he moved to California, he was living in Brentwood, and he said, why would anybody live in a place where it snows? I said, well, maybe you like to ski or something like that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I never forgot that, because I felt, I sort of was bragging up about it. I like the four seasons, you know, like Canada. Why would anybody do that? And he's, you know, he had a point. Anyway, so tonight we're talking about revival and revivalists. And, you know, I remember those TV movies in black and white when we had those famous actors, Mitchum and you know, and the other famous man. I don't think I ever remember some of the big actors taking on revival or religious type shows or whatever, but there were one or two, and I think it was Bob Mitchum had Mr. Mitchum, I forget, who had a show about being a preacher and how he found God during his revival meetings. But when we think of revival, what do you think of, Doug? I mean, what comes to your mind when you hear that word? I'm sure our audience has the same thing. We're going to get to the phone call in just a minute.
That was basically my question. What is the essence of a revival meeting? I've seen bits and pieces in movies, and they're all singing, but they don't really go into what exactly is the motivation and what exactly they do at revival meetings. So I'm talking from a place of ignorance myself in terms of what actually is the purpose and where do they go?
Good question. That's a good question. Revival happens when, as we say, when people are prepared, and you know, for this is supposed to be a high and exalted time. The idea is, I live in a holy and high place. Speaking of this is Isaiah 57:15. For this is what high and exalted one says: He who lives forever, whose name is holy, I live in a high and holy place, but also with the one who is contrite and lowly in spirit, to revive the spirit of the lowly and to revive the heart of the contrite. So in Isaiah, it's talking about, for those of us who are aware, and I'm speaking generally, for people who are aware and they have a good understanding of God, a good relationship with the heavenly knowledge or forces or in the beings in the heavens above, to go to those that are in a low place, to those that are in need. They might be low in spirit, and those are people who are in essence have given up on God. Fortunately, God doesn't give up on us. but they're low in their spiritual connection, understanding, and the intention is to revive their heart. That means the love and the goodness within. So a revival is kind of like a waking up, something like my podcast, The Wake Up. And, you know, I can relate to myself when that moment came when I realized Ross Peterson gave me information while he was in a meditative state, giving me exact information about what Sherry's condition was and then what could be done about it, and that she should not be on the medications, which I didn't tell him about. I became a believer at that moment in time. I was revived, if you will. I found that there was a God out there after all. I was enthusiastic. I was relieved. I was convinced that there was a spiritual world, a dimension of knowledge that was over and above this present world that I was in. It was an eye-opening, spirit-opening, motivating moment, but it was a moment of revelation. And so a revival, I think, is like that. A revival of one's spiritual consciousness. Now, we have, you know, what comes to mind is people see revival meetings as perhaps, you know, people singing in the aisles or in the pews, waving their hands in the air, saying things about being saved and all those wonderful things. Well, they're just acting, I think, from a perspective of what they have perceived before, or they're in the moment and this energy, this virtue is surrounding them and they're feeling relieved. And when one feels relieved, you know, you do all kinds of things. You jump up and down, you wave your hands in the air, you know, you stamp your feet and, oh my God, you know, I'm okay. And it's kind of like being rescued from a fire, a building that's been on fire. It's kind of like being rescued from being pulled out of the ground when there's been a cave-in or something. It's a moment of great relief. But is that consistent? Is that what goes on at revival meetings? No, I don't think so, in as much as what's going on to allow that person to become filled with that virtue, that knowledge, to be relieved, to have a spontaneous transformation from wherever they were into a healthy body, a healthy soul, a healthy emotional healing and or a mental healing, depression leaving them and thoughts of despair, that kind of thing. That's what goes on, but it's how people express it. I've been at big conferences and big revival meetings, so to speak, but in a sense, it would be more like a sitting there in an audience watching the late, great Catherine Kuhlman perform miracles of healing from a stage all by herself, save for a piano player that was a pianist might be a better way of saying that because he was very talented, in the background playing angelic music that was very soothing and relaxing, but off to the side. The focus was on this woman who was talking in a very authoritative yet kindly voice. And all the people in that room, and when I say room, I'm talking about a football, a stadium, or a hockey arena. They were huge places. I was there for three. And witnessing that energy, that moment, it was like an ever-present moment, meaning that we were there for about 2 hours, but it felt like 45 minutes. The time went by. And so what goes on at a revival meeting, I think, is a personal, call it evolution taking place. There is a bubbling up of the spiritual force within you that we call love or other names that it might be given. And that is a moment of complete and utter relief. And I think that moment is so pleasurable, is so wonderful, that people want to stay in that moment. They don't want to go home. They want to stay in that feeling. And I know at this, there's reports that at the Ashbury, a place that the revival was going on and on and on. And of course, these are younger people, and you know, maybe they had the physical stamina to spend a lot of time there, but they didn't want to go home. They were in the present moment, the ever-present moment. So when you have a revival, if you've gone to a large group of people, there is a swarm of energy. That feeling of love multiplies and spreads out, and you're in the moment. You're in a place that you've never before been, or if you have, it's been all too brief. But it's not a consistent, long-term moment or experience. For that time you're there, whether it's an hour or two, you are in a place where all the people there are doing the same thing. They're looking to God for relief, a miracle healing, a forgiveness, a relief of their emotional pain and trauma, and most importantly, if there is most importantly, a sense of peace profound to come over them. Now, however it's done, whether it's dancing in the aisles or it's through music, I have seen some smaller churches who get into that moment with singing and clapping and dancing and music. I think that leads to that moment of bliss. And I think that's what everybody's looking for, bliss. When you have that in your heart, you walk out of there ready to take on the world again. You're no doubt that whatever has been holding you back is something that you can conquer, something that you can overcome, something you can get by. And I think that's what goes on in the process of what we would call a revival. But to witness it, yeah, I think you have to go. And it's like being in any arena, you know, when your favorite team's there, whether it's hockey or basketball or baseball, but more like an indoor place, I think, like basketball, you would, or a hockey rink, it's inside. You would feel the energy of the crowd, and there's an electricity that goes through the crowd. You've heard people say that before. That, I think, is the energy I'm talking about when I say virtue. It's that wonderful energy that connects when we're all sitting there, like if we were all little batteries, we'd all be sitting there giving power and energy to each other, and together, collectively, we are a giant battery full of power. And that power, I think, is transmitted, transferred, given to the people who are weak physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, and spiritually. And so they're boosted with this energy. So I'm just talking off the cuff as I say that, but I think that's the moment that we're all looking for, is that moment of bliss. And once that comes into your heart, well, you're able to conquer any problem in the world, any situation you have, because now you're energized. You've been lifted up. You've been revived. Make sense?
Indeed. I think that's a very succinct but, what should we say, erudite description.
Mm. Well, in other ways, you know, these revival times, by the way, if we think about them, there's revival. I mentioned Old Testament times. And in New Testament times, they come every couple of centuries. But they come when there is darkness. You know, they only come when we get to such a low point. And as we can read through recorded biblical history, we can see commonalities in them. And, for instance, there is a time of moral darkness and national despair or depression. That seems to be out there now, isn't it? We're with these last two great losses, the 35 or 40,000 people that have been killed in the last year in the Ukraine and Russia, the 45,000 people that lost their life in Turkey, there are other earthquakes and other experiences that are adverse and negative around the world. We're not going to recount them because we don't need to dwell on them. And there is that time when we can reach out and feel that spark during this night, this time of darkness. And that spark is what leads us to look for more. We now have hope, that spark, that encouragement, that energizing power of bliss I just spoke about. Each revival is the result of all of us or a nation or a group of us proclaiming that the words of God and the understanding to be associated with the one and only one God have power, and that we can trust those words. And as a result, we start to worship God. We pray every day. We hope every day. And then we have sort of, you know, faith is built on belief and belief is built on evidence. We see things happening that are in the great invisible, made visible dimensions. And at the revivals, we can feel that we are being separated from the error of our ways or sin or mishaps. Sin meaning not to be on the path, but to miss the target. And we can see that we're starting to separate from continuing on in that wayward way. And then as we continue, we start to obey the natural laws. We're kind to one another. We practice the golden rule. We now have a purpose to try to be a better spiritual being. We're not there yet. We don't understand all the things, so we have to watch that we're prudent. We're not naive, and we don't trust the people that we ought not to trust, because there are people. The great enemy of all believers is the great hypocrite, because the hypocrite is a deception. They pretend to be your friend, to be a believer, and they're not. These are the great mischievous souls out there. So watch out for those hypocrites. There are always the dark edges that we look out for. But again, as we're refreshed and we're revived and we're moving forward during these times, there is a learning curve. And that learning curve is how to prudently apply this newfound knowledge so that we're not knocked down, that we're not betrayed, that we're not taken advantage of. And that's part of why people need to come together, so that when you meet those naysayers or those dark souls or those hypocrites, you can, without judging them harshly, you can avoid them. And you can put them out of your life, or at least keep them arm's length, so they don't influence you. And with that, then there is a restoration. That joy that's inside of you is quietly nurtured by coming out or going to these gatherings, these revival meetings, and you're waking up. You wake up more and more. It's kind of like a little kitten, you know. Kittens are born with their eyes closed, and after a couple of weeks, they start to open up their eyes a little bit, and they can see little teeny bits of light, and, you know, you can see their eyes opening up. You can hardly wait as you're watching the little, you know, little kitty cat to open up its eyes so it can see. And that's how we are spiritually. We can hardly wait for those of us who are awake to see those people who are waking up. And we can see them opening their eyes and seeing more light. And it gives us great joy, because we know these people, when they open their eyes up fully, they're going to get it and they're going to understand it. And they're not going to be pulled off the path. They're not going to sin and make mistakes. That they're going to, in their own way, continue to develop into a spiritual being in a physical life, in a physical world. And so each revival, because of that, each time of revival, I might say, is followed by a period of national prosperity. And that's why we ought to do it, so that we will together find our way and have prosperity as a nation. And prosperity means we'll have what we need, we'll have more than we need, we'll correspond with trade back and forth to other nations, and our own society will become a just one. The courts will just be fairly, the government will act fairly, And there won't be a dog-eat-dog, you know, I'm okay and you're not. There won't be tyrants and bullies taking advantage because our society won't allow it. And that is the new role society we're going to move towards in the next, oh, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. We're moving towards that. But first we go through this time of travail. And so as we continue looking for bliss and coming out in mass, and coming to large groups of people who are happy to be there, enjoying each other's company. And you know you do it. You can't fake that, right? You either feel good or you don't. So you can't fib to yourself and say, well, this is a nice party. I think I'll hang around. You say, no, I love this place. I'm feeling this energy. I don't know what this is all about, but I want more. The relief is what you're receiving first. And that relief is embellished by a feeling or a sense of belonging. You're not embarrassed to be there. You don't feel out of place. You're communicating with the great beyond, the great power of God, the bliss, the virtue, and you're finding your way. And then, as you do that, you make these adjustments. You forgive yourself. You repent. You attempt to follow the laws that you know are the just laws, moral laws. Fair laws, trying to teach each other fairly. Again, prudently and slowly and with patience, you come to understand those laws and how to get along with each other. And then the benefit is you're not in despair. You're in a balanced state. You're optimistic. You're looking forward to life. And you don't criticize people. You don't condemn people. You're not always complaining. You get off the internet. You don't follow the conspiracy theories. You're not always looking for problems like all our conspiracy searchers are doing. You find that there is light and life and good things in the world. And, you know, you put your cell phone down, you say, I'm not looking at that darn thing again. It's a wonderful little communicating device. It's a little spy. It knows where I am all the time. I'm going to leave it at home today. I'm going to fool whoever's watching. I'm going to go off to the beach. I'm going to go to the park, or I'm just going to go out in the backyard. I'm going to get some sun. And as you do that, you put sun in your life, sun in your heart, sun in your soul. And no matter what comes at you, you know you can overcome it, handle it, deal with it. And that is the purpose of what we're all about and where we're going with our Hope Conferences, with our Mini Mansion Spiritual Center in Campbellford, and all the other things that we are going to do, because this is our time, this is our way. And the people who are listening to my voice tonight and in the future, we will be looking for this together. It's kind of like we're a team, you know. Individually, we're all going in different directions. But as a team, we come together and we share the load, we pull the load, we work together, and we get to where we want to go easily. You know, many hands make light work. So this is what I think for tonight's show and the topic. Revival meetings are on the increase, and they're helping to shed the moral darkness and overcome the national depression. That's why there are more people spontaneously coming together, because it's the right thing to do. Have you ever watched little kids, Doug, in the playground? You know, they don't sit off by themselves. They all come together. They don't know each other. Maybe the first day of school, they're in kindergarten. What do? They come over and they talk to each other. They sit around close to one another. As people get older, we tend to stay away from other people, don't we?
Well, children have an innocence, and they don't, and they're less likely to judge. And I think it's something that adults should imitate much more.
So adults have it wrong, shouldn't judge.
That's correct.
Adults, you should be watching children. And if you ever see little kids come together, we always smile, don't we? If you see little kids playing soccer,
mm-hmm.
My wife, dear Karen, that's what she used to do. She would go over to the local park, and they have little kids. And we're talking, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper kind of kids. They'd have their little shirts on that would be down around their ankles. And somebody would have the ball, and that would just be like a magnet. Both teams, the ball would go whatever. And They'd all go en masse and they follow the ball. There was no spreading out and kicking the ball around. I was just like, I can hear her laughing now. She used to get the biggest kick out of that. And so that's how we need to be. We need to come together.
Well, and you know, the thing I admire about children is, well, for example, there was this psychological analysis talk that it dealt with many years ago and is still in effect. They talked about the parent inside, the adult, and the child. And in most grown-up people, the adult is predominant, and then there's the parent, who's judgmental, and then there's the child, who's playful. And the child is very small in the psyche of many adults. And I think there's, if the child were more, were stronger in adults, they'd have more fun. They would enjoy life more. They would be less judgmental. All of these good things and I think Jesus referred to a child too. Something to the mm-hmm. fact that you have to be like a child in order to enter into heaven. So it's an attribute that unfortunately is grilled out of us as we grow up, you know. And not the least of which is we're taught to bottle up our emotions, which is not good mentally, emotionally, or physically. So there's a lot to be said about being not childish, but childlike in many ways, seeing wonder in the world, you know, and being open and non-judgmental and feeling happy just by being in life, by seeing something beautiful, by being in a comfortable, warm, sunny day and enjoying what's going on. You know, not doing mm-hmm. anything, but just enjoying being within oneself and communicating with nature. And that is something that is sorely lost in our society. My opinion, but I think there may be a lot of truth in it.
Okay, well, let's hope it's not lost. Maybe it's just misplaced. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's still there. But
there's a lot of light out there.
Many of us.
Yeah, there's a lot of light out there. And here on the Blog Talk Radio at the Global Village Radio Show, we are a floodlight of hope, and we are reaching out to our friends around the world. I've been talking to people in Latin America recently, and for those of you who are listening to the show all over the world in your time zones, please send in those comments. We love to hear them. And we do have our Sunday service on Zoom. Go to the International School of the Prophets.com website and put in your email address and you'll get an email from us. It's non-shared. It's private. It's for our own purposes. Or you can click on the link that's there. We're Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern North American time. So with that, Paul, it's just about time to go to the phones, and you're in the background there working away very feverishly, keeping everything going correctly. And I thought I'd ask you just spontaneously when I asked Doug about the same, when you think of revival meetings, what do you think about? What do you think they are?
Well, Douglas, when I grew up. My family was every Sunday dedicated to the Episcopal Church, and my dad was in the choir. My mom taught Sunday school. I became a missionary for our church in my later teen years. Revivals to me were very foreign. I've always seen them in movies, and I never had an opportunity to attend one, and I always thought it would be interesting to feel what I perceived to be the energy that takes place during a revival with everybody participating at one time, whereas when I was in church, growing up, you didn't really participate other than following basically the the program of what was being done that particular Sunday, and we had the, you know, many different hymns that I became familiar with and creeds. So I would love to attend a revival and get totally enwrapped, involved in the process and the energy. I would like to just experience it. So I would love to do that. And Asbury now University was at the time that I did some work for them years ago in Kentucky. It was a seminary and a small college. And I got to become very friendly with the head of the marketing department as my company was doing work for them, and have lunch every once in a while and just have the knowledge that we had something in common. And that was that we were all working together to spread the word of God through the seminary and through the college. So unfortunately, I have not had the opportunity to participate in a revival. And Douglas, maybe we'll do one someday.
Well, I think that's what our miracle transformation events used to be back in the day. We would have people together and we would have that Holy Spirit, that virtue, and everybody would feel good about it. And there would be multiple levels of healing, physically, financially, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And so at the end of those events, people would feel filled with that energy. And we're going to do that again. We're going to come up to Arizona coming up in the next little while. You can reach out, my friends, and look for the official hopeconferences.com website, which is in the works. You will have opportunities to join with us and the group of us that are putting together this International Hope Conference, but throughout the U.S. at this point in time. And so keep that in mind. Mark it on the calendar. Check it out, officialhopeconferences.com.
.org. Sorry about that. .org.
I think Jack has two or three of them. So anyway, .org, that's fine. And we will keep the movement forward. And whatever you do, my friends, mark that on the board as, the whiteboard, is something to keep in front of you for that coming. And, of course, Sundays, we have our service at the International School of Prophets Zoom virtual healing. So with that, let's head on over to the phones and take a call, and then we'll go to a commercial. We'll go to 10:30, I think, tonight, as we have some callers here. We'll just keep going as long as there's interest. So where do you think we're going to go next, Paul?
We're going to very snowy Chicago, Illinois. We've got Karen on the line, Douglas.
Hello, Karen.
Hi, how are you? I wanted to tell you that you were correct. Last week I told you that my boyfriend and I went to a Super Bowl party and we had gotten sick. And you said that there was COVID at that party, and you mm-hmm. were correct, you know. So we decided to take a test. He had some tests here, and I said, well, let's take it, you know. And I said, I doubt we don't have it. And both of us took the test, and we failed. We both had COVID. We're fine now, but yeah, you were correct on that. And you said that it had started at that house, and the person that threw the party and his girlfriend, he got sick too, and he was off to the doctor as well. So there was only three couples there. So I believe the other couple that was there was the one that probably were sick, didn't want to say, or who knows, you know. But I know it wasn't us, you know.
Well,
so, but you were 100% correct.
Well, thank you for that. I always like the confirmation. I know you thought it was the flu or something, and everybody else did, but that was my right away impression. But sounds like you're doing okay. You've obviously gotten over it. So,
yes.
Good for you, Karen. Excellent.
Oh, yes. And I have another question. I was telling you about that job that I was interested in applying. Well, another job popped up and it's a little bit, it's not an administrative job, but it's like an HR job, and I may apply for that job as well. My friend that works there, he said that he had seen a girl who was like an administrative assistant. She was hiding behind a whiteboard. You mentioned whiteboard earlier. It's kind of funny. And she was crying behind a whiteboard, hiding from, I guess, the bosses. And she was on the phone crying. And he said, that's the job you're going to be getting. He said, you better look for something else in there. So I did. I happened to find another position. And I'm just wondering if you see them giving me the other position in the HR department.
I think you're going to be offered what you want. That's what I see.
You
nodding away, and so it's kind of hard to pick, but it looks like you're going to get what you want.
Okay, yeah. He says that that company is hard to keep employees. For some reason, they're just taking off out of there. So I said, well, I'll give I have to look for my paperwork, my resume, and my proper paperwork to get it together. But now that I'll be going home on Monday, now that I feel better, I'll be able to get back on track here.
It's okay. So, you have a little funny thing on your desk, like a little toy or something, stuffed toy.
Yes, not here. I'm at my boyfriend's house, but at home I have like these Nico cats, those Japanese cats that are they're for business. I have those on my desk at home.
Okay. Well, I see them on your desk, so I was going to say wherever you are, I guess that's more permanent. You'll have one on your desk
at
the office. Yes. Okay. That just popped in my mind as you were talking. So.
Yeah, that's correct. I always carry them with me. Yeah.
Okay. So you'd be taking it to your new desk, which would be your new top. Okay. There you go. Looks good.
Yeah.
Looks positive.
Okay, I'll let you know. I'll let you definitely know. It'll take me a week to get it together, but I'm getting better.
Yeah, to eat a lot of you can take hydrogen peroxide drops in water, and you can eat a lot of honey.
Okay.
Unpasteurized honey is better. It tends to get rid of the stuff. So that is to save bacteria. Okay, good for you, Karen. And glad you're okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for being part of the show again. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Okay. So as we said last week, Karen and her friends attended a store, a party, and they were not feeling so well. And immediately the next day, my first impression was they had COVID. Notice how casually we were talking about that, Doug? I mean,
Yes.
It's just like, not too long ago, oh my God, you got COVID, you're done. And I don't know what it is. I just don't know what it is, but there is this casual thought about it. And I've lost a lot of friends during that time. They were doing things that weren't common sense, and they weren't taking care of themselves, and they thought perhaps it was a hoax or whatever. But I lost quite a few client friends over that. And I was just thinking now when Karen was talking about how casual we've become about COVID, which is a prediction. I made a prediction about that too, with like AIDS and other things. Go ahead.
I said it's human nature to be that way. I can remember talking to my dad, and he was subject to bombings during the Second World War, and after a while, he just didn't bother going to shelter. He said, "No, I won't bother. I just, they're very casual about the city he's in being bombed." But a lot of people felt that way as well. They just got used to it, so they treated it without much emotion. And so that's human nature to be that way.
Okay, I'll take what you said.
In my opinion.
Okay. Okay, Paul, where are we going next?
We are going to New Mexico. We've got Melinda on the line, Douglas.
Okay. Hello, Melinda.
Hello.
Hi.
Douglas Cortell, thank you for taking my call. What a wonderful show. Especially my favorite one was the Christmas one. I can't wait to Christmas again. So it was a really good show. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay. You're welcome.
Yeah, and thank you. It was really fun because now I'm drinking hot chocolate every night before I go to sleep. So
okay,
I'm glad I tuned in.
I think a lot of us, when we suggested hot chocolate back at the time, a lot of us have started to drink hot chocolate. But anyway, thanks for letting me know it worked out.
So, for being high end professional, I did read two of your books. I'm planning to get more. It's a two part question. So. And I'm going to focus on my male guy friend. He's been one of the greatest I ever met through my years of, because he has helped so much, helped me, and I'm really grateful for that, because again, if I said something wrong, I also want to apologize. So my question here is, I told him that I was going to. And I wouldn't recommend doing it to somebody because, yeah, feelings hurt, jealousy, and then painful, yeah. But because I got irritated, and he got irritated, so I said, I'm gonna go see someone. I'm gonna go see. Sorry, I'm acting childish, but I was so irritated that I said that. So to see his reaction. Did he get upset? I said, I'm going to go see man.
No, I think he was shocked a little bit that you said that. And that was a good thing. He had some backbone there. And it was like, I can see him like respect, you know, like, oh my gosh, like, you know, like, I see it as a bit of a surprise. So good for you. Nothing, no, he's not upset. It doesn't matter if he is, he's wrong. He should be paying attention to you. Right?
So he's not jealous.
Oh, I didn't say that. I didn't say jealous. He's like wondering who is this person now. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of jealousy there. Yes, but what you asked me, was he upset? I don't think so. Like, didn't get angry, you know. That's good.
So
you're
this,
doing okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to. I need to see that, because of the, so this is another question. Why has he been lately irritated? Is it because of a need?
Well, he doesn't see you very often, right? I mean, how many times have you seen him yet? Or
just on the Zoom, and then I think he's a little bit like telepathically. He can see me psychically. I don't know.
Yeah, well, all that's nice, but what you want is a relationship. You don't want a storybook fantasy kind of thing. You want a real relationship, and he's kind of like into that fantasy world. He's kind of like, you know, perhaps we'll get together. Perhaps this, perhaps that. And the reality is that, you know, you haven't got time. And it's either, you know, make a commitment, come and see me, make some forward motion that this is developing. Otherwise, if you don't, then this isn't happening. This is all fantasy. Sometimes people have romances that are fantastic. They never met each other, but there's this romance of the mind, it's called. And years will go by. And people will never get together because times go by, then they feel they're ugly or they're old or something else. You know, family won't appreciate it. The best time is right now, today. So if he's willing to make that commitment and come and see you in person, because I think he said it's not that far away, then that gives you some hope. And, you know, you can right away find out, is this going to be a relationship for a real one, hands-on relationship for the rest of my life? If it's not, then I'm out of here. I'm on my way, because that's not what you want. You don't want a fantasy. You want a real guy, right? Correct?
Yes. Yes, I do. This is the thing that He didn't give me much detail, but he told me 2-3 months ago that he was having some problems with his business and the partnership. I don't know if that is to resume later on this year.
Well, he's probably having some issues, but we don't care about that. That's his business. It's got nothing to do with his relationship with you.
Oh, that's true.
Don't get distracted. And that's what he's doing. He's wishy-washy, and, you know, he's got cold feet. Okay, fine. But then people listening to my voice, they're all knowing exactly what's going on here, and you're trying to be accommodating, perhaps a little too much. But this is time. Time's going by. And it's like, no, we either get together or we don't. But you're not going to keep in this fantasy anymore. That's what you keep in your mind. And then he either comes or he doesn't. But anyway, tonight's this is off topic for tonight about spiritual revival. And in a way, it's kind of like you know, getting this revival within yourself to say, nope, I deserve a relationship. I deserve better. I deserve to be loved. And I'm going to get it. If he's not going to give it to me, somebody else is out there loving me, but he's in my way. He's preventing me from getting what I want to go or where I want to be. Does that make sense?
That's so beautiful. And one more thing on the spiritual revival, because this is part of what I need to do. As you were looking at him, if I even mention or do anything, is he going to make some sort of change? Perhaps, what do you see?
Well,
are you seeing anything on it?
Yeah, listen, Melinda. This is not this is a radio show. It's not one for personal readings, and we're getting into that too much now. So I'm going to say I've answered your question tonight. I wish you well, and we have a whole lot of people standing by, and we're running out of time. So I hope it's been helpful. Okay.
Good job.
And keep up the hot chocolate. We are. Since we had that show with hot chocolate, we're having chocolate here. Okay. Take care, Melinda. Okay?
Thank you.
We wish you well. Okay. Bye for now. Paul, where are we going next?
Let's see. We are going back to snowy Chicago, Douglas. We've got Carol on the line.
Hello, Carol.
Hey. I did get your I managed to transcribe your interview. So
that's nice. Okay.
Yeah. I thought I'd tell you that. Now, Dr. Cotter, okay. What comes to your mind when you hear, is it conspiracy or is it the truth? When you hear Black Knight Satellite.
Say that again. It was just a little bit of a breakup here on my
phone.
I'm
sorry. When you hear, is it a conspiracy or is it the truth? It is it's a satellite, and it's called Black Knight Satellite. And they said it's been out there for way before the 60s, I think. And it's still there.
Yeah, whenever I hear those satellites, I go to NASA. I don't often do this, but I always am suspicious about them. And I've never yet... even though I've been on shows, very serious shows that have taken those things seriously, I've never yet seen one of those mysterious things out there that are threats, and they're not on infrared, they're not on some other off the radar kind of thing that people say they can see with it by their secret abilities on the internet. So I'm always a little skeptical of those things. I don't slam the door closed on them, Carol, but there are things out there. There's a Death Star, and there was a huge comet coming at us. I did on the YouTube show, we were talking about a real comet that came by, and I said it was going to miss the Earth. It would be a near miss, but it would miss the Earth on a 45-degree angle. And I remember seeing a picture from a satellite taken back on the Earth, and there was this path of this satellite going by on a 45-degree angle. So I don't think we're in any danger. I think we're in more danger of aliens coming and taking the country over, the world over, and saying, okay, you guys have to behave or else. And I think that we're in more danger of than we are of collisions in the cosmos.
I'm not saying it's in danger, Dr. Cottrell. I'm saying, is it out there? Is that black night satellite out there?
Yeah, I don't see it. I just see nothing. I see, you know, when you say that, I would normally have a glimpse in my mind, but I don't see anything there, Carl. It's all black.
Okay. Another question before you throw me off. Mind control. You know, this is by Jose Silva. He died in 1999, but he has this silver mind control. Now, how is that similar to, I don't know what that is. Is that similar to, sorry about that phone. Is that similar to quantum meditation?
Quantum meditation is the ability to go into a timeless spot, move forward and backward in time. Jose Silva, his book was called Mind Control, and it was an ability to use the visionary skills of clairvoyance. And he was able to see things at a distance, and it would be more like clairvoyance. But at the time, Silva Mind Control meant the power of your mind, controlling the intuitive aspects of your mind. And it got a bad rap after a while where people thinking it was mind control, you're trying to control other people's minds. Of course, that opinion was in the mind, the minority. So in a way, his book and being able to go and look into somebody's body and see a problem there, that's similar to what quantum meditation is, this ability to project your mind, but also to be in a timeless moment. And that's the difference between remote viewing and mind projection. So in a way, yes, it's very similar.
Yes. I think what happened is as time goes on, it would be more and more popular. But what happens when he said mind control, I think that for the people in this era and the past era, they thought it was a negative thing, but it really is a positive thing. The civil mind control.
Yeah, well, as I said, his book was out there in the mid-70s, and mind control meant being in control of your mind intuitively. But again, it got a bad rap because people didn't read the book. They just assumed it was, you know, something. When somebody says entities, that's another thing that just people just jump on. And an entity is a consciousness. It's something. But a lot of people think it's a dark force, it's a demon, it's a ghost or whatever. So it's just people's limitation. As I said, it was a well-written book. He was well-respected. A lot of people took his course, and they were able to use their mind and their mind control, if you will, and see things in meditation and clairvoyance. But it got a bad rap, like you say. But it's always the way, you know. The children always criticize the grandparents or their parents. It's the arrogance of youth, and they'll say, we should have known better. Our parents and grandparents should have known better, but look what they're doing in their own life and, what was going on in their parents' lifetime and their grandparents' lifetime, the way they got along with each other. It was considered acceptable, but nowadays those things are not acceptable. But again, it's just an opinion. It's the way people look at things. I'm framing your question for a lot of people to say keep an open mind and go be in somebody else's shoes for 1,000 steps before you judge what they are. So in a way, mind control, and it was perhaps was one of those things like defund the police. There was an idea, but the terminology was pretty argumentative. But it had a different meaning than what people took. And I'm not trying to judge it or compare it. I'm just trying to say how it could be misdirected. So anyway, there you go, Carol.
Because you got people right now re-imaging the civil mind control, and they're doing it to young people. And okay, Dr. Cottrell, my last question. is there ever going to be a drug prevention program for 4th, 5th, and 6th graders? Now, I've been from everybody, and I have not heard anything back yet.
Well,
it's like a drug
prevention. If enough people get interested, then things change. And when there is a lackadaisical interest, you know, it's a priority. There's only so much money in the public fund, and whoever screams the loudest gets the most or gets some benefit. So my answer is, I don't think so. I think it's just going to languish. There are a lot of good things that should be done, but people aren't logical, right? They're not logical. And so that's the problem with democracy. It's a very ineffective, inefficient way of governing. But it's the best way. It's everybody else, any other kind of government, they tell you what to do. For our friends out there in politics, and they're talking about separating the states and maybe civil war and how this and that and the other thing, and there's the red and the blue. In other countries in the world, you don't get to pick your occupation. You do what your father did. When your father dies, you get his job. And you're told what you're going to do and where you're going to live. And you are through a caste system. You cannot move up. You can't move up to the middle class, for instance, if you're in the lower class. And you dare not fall down from the upper classes to the mid or lower class, because that would just be disastrous for you. So you have this, I'm not going to call it discrimination, I'm going to say this caste system, that exists throughout most of the world. And, you know, we have the working class in the West, we have the middle class, we have the upper middle class, we have the executive class, and then we have the wealthy, and then we have the super wealthy. Well, any of us who wanted to be that, to go up through those classes or strata, can do it. But in most parts of the world, you cannot do it. And that is the blindness that's out there, in my humble opinion. And that's why we need revival times, and we need people to come together to overcome those shortcomings of falling into that gap of, I can't do anything about it. In America, North America, you can get anything and do anything you want if you have a mind to do it. But
yeah,
complaining is not the way. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to, I know what to do. I'm going to visualize it happening. That's all that's going to happen. I know how to do it. And then lastly, is Lightfoot going to win the election for Chicago?
I think so. She's got a lot of big friends.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. We'll see. Okay, Carol, thanks for putting me on the spot again. We'll see you next time. Okay, Carol. Let's take a short break, Paul, and get a drink of water here, and we'll come back. And we have, looks like, a few more people around the world here. And New York, we're going to go to. We're going to head on down to Chicago then, or no, we're going to go to New York a couple of times. Hang tough, my friends. We'll be right back. Paul?
We're so glad you tuned in tonight to the Global Village Radio Show with Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. We'll be back in just a few moments. For many years, clairvoyant seers have had the ability to peer into the Akashic field and see the library of information for every thought, deed, and action of souls living on the physical earth plane. One of four such individuals, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, trained under the direction of Ross Peterson, who, just like Edgar Cayce,
was able to diagnose and provide guidance for physical and other problems encountered in daily life. One of Douglas's many books, The Complete New Age Health Guide, is a plentiful resource from thousands of clairvoyant readings. You'll learn how thought, emotion, and attitude influence your physical health, keys to anti-aging, the simple ways to a good life and diet, and so much more. Take a look at the New Age Health Guide, on sale now at DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Here's a little book packed with over 350 simple inspirational messages that you can use on a daily basis. It's called Gems of Wisdom. If you follow these simple steps to reach the divine within, you'll change not only yourself, but the world. A must-read for the spiritual-minded person. Available now at DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Gems of Wisdom. You're listening to the Global Village International Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell. Call in and ask a question about tonight's topic at area code 718-766-4421. That's 718-766-4421. Now, once again, here's Dr. Douglas James Cottrell.
And welcome back to the show, my friends. I just a little text coming by here. I am available for personal consultations. If you'd like to call me up, I will go to my website, DouglasJamesCottrell.com. Again, my whole name, Douglas James Cottrell, C-O-T-T-R-E-L-L.com, and you'll be able to find a way to speak with me for personal concerns and be able to book a session with me. Okay, DouglasJamesCottrell.com. I also have some books there, as you just heard. And if you're interested, there are several that you might be interested in. And so have a look at my website, DouglasJamesCottrell.com. We have a podcast called The Wake Up, and we are here listening to every Friday. We might be updating the show, Changing the Night, that's in the works as we upgrade and move forward here. But we're here every week, and we may have a daytime show coming up as well. So go to my website, put your email in that on the homepage, and make sure you get an email from us announcing our plans here as we go through this time of change and upgrading. So there we go. Paul, I'm thinking of poor Douglas there, 17 degrees below Celsius. Oh, my God.
Wow. That's cold. We had 80 degrees in Nashville yesterday, so it was a hot summer day here.
Okay, well, I think Doug and I are going to get in the car and come and visit you. What do you think, Doug?
It sounds, well, as long as we don't run into a snowstorm on the way down there, but it would be nice to get there, that's for sure.
Or a snag at the border?
Ha, yes.
Whatever that means. Yeah. You know, Doug and I will get the little rubber raft out there, you know. I mean, on the Southport, you have people digging tunnels and going under fences. Well, we have the St. Clair River. We could just kind of paddle over. It's about 100 yards wide, you know.
Yeah.
What do you think, Doug, you know? have a little pontoon boat, little sailboat. And, okay, left turn. Oh, hello. Here we are in Michigan. Oh, what about that? Did you know that along the St. Clair River, just north of Detroit, on the northeast side, there is a little town, and guess what its name is? Cottrell. C-O-T-T-R-E-L-L. It's on the shoreline of the St. Clair River, just south of Lake St. Clair, which is a small lake. It's a sixth lake. It's not a great lake, but it's a small lake within the five Great Lakes. And somewhere there is on that point, and every time I think about it and say, yep, I'm going to go there, stand under the sign, walk into the local stores and say, hey, so where's my relatives, you know? Who founded this place? But it's there. Anyway, a little bit of trivia, my friends. So we have a little time left going to the show, maybe another 20 minutes or so. Where are we going next, Paul?
We are going to New York. We have Carmen on the line. Douglas?
Hello, Carmen. Hello, Carmen. You're on the air. Maybe Carmen has stepped away from the phone. Carmen,
well,
you're on the air. Okay, let's take another call and we'll come back.
We will move to Pat, who is in Connecticut.
Hello, Pat.
Hi, how are you?
Are you cold in Connecticut by any chance? Have you got any cold weather there?
It's not as terrible as we expected. We thought we were going to get pretty bad ice storms, but it's just a little worse. A little further up north where my son is, there's quite a big difference in Massachusetts versus Connecticut.
Okay, I've been to Sharon, Connecticut. I've been to Thompson, Connecticut.
Those are nice areas.
Yeah. I've been on the tectonic, Parkway. I think is that how you say it? Beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, that is.
So let's go. We'll talk to Carmen, who's may have just dropped a call. We'll get her to call back, and she's doing it right now. So, okay, what can I do for you tonight, Pat?
A few questions. I'm going to be sort of all over the place with quickly. First of all, I missed the beginning of the show. This talking about revival, does it have to do with this one that happened recently in Kentucky?
Yeah, that's where we started the show off, and apparently revivals are spreading. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I Googled revival because I don't really know much about it and got all that news. And yeah, it sounds like it would be, I would love to be in one, and maybe as the church is failing in many ways, maybe this is the thing that's going to kind of bring it back. It would be interesting to see these happening. You were talking about satellites a bit, and it reminded me of a dream, a sort of dream I had. I was traveling out west up in Canada and United States, and woke up after what seemed like a dream, but was, I'm sure, was not a dream. I was sleeping outside under the sky, looking at the stars. They were so beautiful. And I realized that there was a spaceship above the stars, which made me realize the enormity of the spaceship. And it brought the truth to me of spaceships can be huge. And it gave me a wonderful feeling, and I'm just, if you could comment on that.
Well, you're saying that you had an image of a spaceship that was huge, and it was sitting up there in the stars, and it gave you comfort? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it made me realize how big it was because the stars were underneath it.
Oh, okay, then that meant it was up there in outer space. Far away, so, and it gave you comfort. So that either means that we're being watched over from, you know, from afar, and there are people who have had dreams about visitors coming to help us, and that may be why you felt comfort, that they're on their way, those beings from off-world beings, that they're watching over us.
It was neat that it was so much bigger than I would ever have imagined the reality of what a spaceship or UFO could be.
Yeah, well, we're a teeny, when you compare the Earth to any of the other planets, I mean, Mars and Venus maybe, but we start comparing ourselves to Neptune, Saturn, and Jupiter.
Right.
You know, we're pretty tiny. So to have an idea that... you know, size is irrelevant. I mean, basically, we've seen, you know, Egyptian carvings where they have a gigantic figure sitting on a throne. We've seen pictures where in different places in the world there has been the bones found, for instance, of gigantic beings. And
right.
So who's to say that somewhere out there, you know, there aren't people who are like titans, that
right.
they're 20, 30, 50 feet tall and that they live 800, 900, 1,000 years.
Right.
And they're just from off world. So it would be like, you know, us, the gravitational thing people are thinking that would be like us going to the moon. We live on a bigger planet, so we can go on the moon, and it's not disastrous for us. But the other way around would be if a small planet like us, humans went to Jupiter, we wouldn't be able to move. We'd be like, you know, a gravitational pull would plaster us on the ground. So beings of great size could come to the world, and that might be a glimpse of those beings that are far, far away, which have huge, huge, huge ships. Because
yeah.
they're in, that's the way they are, you know.
Right. Okay.
Where the pygmies of the universe comes to my mind.
Yeah. Right. couple more things. I'll try to be quick. I just want to, I fall asleep all the time way too early, and I missed so many of your shows. A couple of Fridays ago, I fell asleep and missed it. But I did want to, I was really pulled to ask you that Thursday before, I had left a hypnosis session and went into such a sense of gloom. It was so bad. I thought, what's going on? And I went to the news to see if anything was going on, and I watched it for a couple of days and nothing was happening. And I thought, this is me. For the next week, I literally had trouble breathing and was so incredibly tired. I thought, there's something really bad going on with my health. And then the earthquake happened, and I thought, you know, maybe that was it. And then when I went back to listen to your show, I heard that it kind of confirmed to me what you said. And I don't know, whatever it was you said, I also got a great sadness.
Okay.
And sadness made me think that, there, you know, there's more to come.
You're right about that. Yeah,
okay.
And you were picking up on what would be the race mind or the consciousness of all the people on the planet. And in a short way of saying we're all one, it's kind of like a toothache. When you have a toothache, your whole body aches, even though it's just your tooth. And so that's what happens in the world. We had this massive death of 45,000 people in 1 minute.
Yeah.
When that earthquake struck, it wasn't the recovery and people were dying over days and weeks. They all died on mass in a moment. And so that cry, that pain, Obi-Wan Kenobi in the Star Wars movies had that same sense when there was that planet that was blown up by the bad guys. And he said, oh, it's like a million voices called out all at once. That's exactly what happened in Turkey. So, it's a feeling. First of all, it's a preview of what's coming. You're feeling sad and bad because we intuitively know this is going to happen. And then when it does happen, you pick up on the pain and the suffering in the clairsentient way. And then it stops. It goes away because now the event's over. And that's the ticket to say, oh, this was my clairsentient, clear feeling. Premonition, precognition, that was what it was picking it up.
Okay.
Many people had that.
Yeah, so I was like sick for a whole week, and then it stopped, like you say. And then when I listened to you, sorry, I've got a tickle in my throat, and something made me think, there's going to be more. I got sad, but that sadness scared me because I feel at this point so out of control with what's coming in the world. It's frightening. That's all. I don't need, you know, I just want to say that quickly. And
well,
it's
okay. I wrote a book in 2011, and it was a bigger book based on the first book, 2012 and beyond. And then the next book was called The New Earth. And we talk about this as a renovation time.
Yeah.
It is a renovation time. And so in a renovation, that means, you know, the house stood there, and it was a beautiful house, and it started to deteriorate, and then it was in need of updating. And so what happens in a renovation. You've got the house, you throw out all the old stuff, and you put in new stuff. And that's what's happening in the world today. And this is why we're talking to people. Believe in God. Pray to God every day. Pray for being for gratitude, and pray for protection. God listens. And you won't be in a place where there's going to be harm. You'll be somehow moved away. So, there's more coming. There's more coming, and there's more military things coming. I'm happy, in a way, to see that China is talking to Russia in this small way, that China can broker a peace. They can assist Russia, although they're historically Russia and China are enemies. But China isn't an aggressive nation. They've had like one war in 200 years. They don't normally go to war with their enemies. They're always defensive. And so if they can convince Mr. Putin that this is economically dumb, not sound, they might be able to broker a peace in Ukraine with Russia and let him save face. Otherwise, you know, you're right. There's more bad stuff coming. And there probably is in other parts of the world as well. I'm talking about earthquakes and volcanoes or something we need to keep an eye on, and not too much attention is being paid there.
Right.
So stock up. You know, get yourself an extra couple of bags of rice or potatoes or something like that.
Couple more things. I see it happening in the world, and I see it on a personal level. And for me, the past year, I lost 3 friends in 1 week, and my only remaining friend is changing and getting sort of, I think out of fear, getting very toxic in her conversations to me, and I sort of can't be around it. And it's and I said to myself walking out in the woods, I just want to talk to someone. And I realized, and I wondered, is God pushing me to lose so much? So I finally turned to him. And just want to ask you quickly, I'm devastated financially, and even at that, it's so bad that I am not able to intellectually solve my problems. So I've just kind of raised my hand and said, I just have to have faith in God, which is really frightening and seems ridiculous when you're dealing with financial devastation, but I don't have any other answer. And it's kind of calming me in a bit.
Well, no matter what problem you face, everybody has had the same problem. Other people have had the same problem, or they're going to have the same problem. So when you have financial difficulties, this is a lack, and you say to God, I need money, and you have a specific amount, say you need $500 a month or whatever, and then you say to yourself, now this is my need, money, this is the amount of money I need, what am I willing to do to help myself get that money? And then I'll let God show me the way to get that money.
Okay.
And this is what God provides. God doesn't say there's no pay window where you go down the end of the hallway and you get your money, your $500. But you go down the hallway and God will say, here's a job over here at a clothing store. And they pay $5 an hour. Okay, I'll take it. You need $10 or $15 an hour, but you say, well, I'll take it. And then you keep looking and you say, here's another job at a Home Depot. And you say, I've never done that before, but they pay $10. Okay, I'll take it. And as long as you put that in front of you, that God provides.
Mm-hmm.
And when you reach up and ask, you know, Pat, everybody's been there. Everybody, me too. It's one of the great spiritual lessons. It's called the penniless stage. But you keep your faith and you say, okay, I'm all right. I've got my health. I got some ideas. Let me take stock of what I'm able and capable of doing. And somebody right now, I can guarantee you this, somebody right now is looking for you. Not necessarily you personally that they know, but for you that has the abilities, the talents, and the skills that they need.
Okay.
Right now, they're looking for you. So what's the problem? What's the catch? Well, where are they? Okay, God, please provide a pathway to that person that needs me, who will pay me well for my services, and whom I will do the best I can for them, give them the best service I can. And please send them to me, the sooner the better, amen. That's the prayer.
Okay.
Everybody's been there, Pat, but the one thing that separates the people who give up and the people that succeed is that. They say, help me find a way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If there's any consolation, I have been impecunious. I've been through what you've been through also, and I survived. It was very difficult, but I did whatever was necessary, and I had faith, and I prayed, and Douglas is offering, from my opinion, from my point of view, excellent advice.
Yeah.
Know in your heart you will survive. You will move forward. Have no doubt about that. And trust that you say the prayer and you keep your eyes and ears open and wits about you, and you will move forward. From my perspective, from my experience, there's no doubt about that.
It's interesting. I've almost lost the ability to worry like I usually worry and make myself really, really, really sick. And I'm certainly not one to give that up. It's like I've lost it. It's almost like my brain has been made stupid. And, you know, that could be, you know, trying to move towards God, putting some kind of calmness over me. So I'm calm, and I believe that I'll find the way for God. And then there's moments when I say, this is ridiculous. This is the most absurd thing, you know, as far as practicality of you literally, you're thousands in debt and you need a new car. Anyway, that lasts for a minute, and then I go back to knowing I have nothing but to believe in God.
Here's what a wise businessman once told me. He said, those people you owe money to, they should be worrying about you paying them back, not you worrying about them. Okay? And what he meant was, those people you owe money to, they don't worry about you. They don't think about you. Your name comes up on the computer and they give you a call. And they don't get you. They move on to the next one. So it was advice to calm me down and saying, yeah, those people you owe the money to, they're the ones that need to be worried, not you. If you don't pay them back, what's going to happen? Nothing. So, okay?
Okay. All right, thank you so much.
Yeah, but anyway, go knock on those doors, those places I was talking about. It might be, you know, someplace, a dress store or a Home Depot. I could see in a Home Depot walking around saying, hey, can I help you? Say, yeah, sure. Can you show me where this screwdriver is?
Right.
Anyway, give it a try. Make the attempt and say, okay, God, please guide me to where I can get some income. And this is the Job story in the Bible. I read about Job. He had everything. Okay. His faith was in money. He lost all his money, and he ended up living on an ash pile. And that's when he realized that his faith was in God, not his possessions. Then
right.
He got everything.
Yeah.
Good luck, kiddo. Okay.
Thank you so much. Thanks for answering and listening to all my questions and statements. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay.
We wish you success. Okay.
Thank you. Have a good night, everybody.
Okay. You too. Okay, my friends, we have a couple more calls here to take. Where are we going next, Paul?
Going back to New York, Douglas, and we've got Catherine on the line.
Hi,
Catherine.
Thank you
so much
for taking my call. Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm warmer than Doug is.
I've got wool socks on, though, so I'm pretty comfortable.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, two sweaters on. Yes, I was wondering, please. I keep on having this dream of somebody. His name is Kevin. I don't think it's romantic because I believe he's taken. I don't know. Do you see him and I working like projects together? Is that what it means when he comes through? He doesn't say anything. He just kind of looks at me in the dream.
Okay. Well, you're going to meet up with him. He's taking, it looks to me like he's giving you a good hard look, right? He kind of gives you a stare kind of look. So, I think he's going to end up in your life somehow.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Might I ask really quick one more thing, please, if you don't mind?
Not at all.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate you. There's another project that I'm doing. It's going to be an event, and I'm doing it in March, but I'm thinking of doing it again in June. I was wondering if you see this being a good course of action or if you see it pulling me away from other stuff I want to do too much.
I see you pulling on a tug of war on a rope. That's what I see.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a struggle, but it's kind of like you're pulling it towards you. So a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels right now. Mm-hmm. Tug of war.
Yeah, I just see you pulling it. It's like a bit of a tug of war. It's there, but you're putting effort into bringing it towards you. So you can get it, but it's going to be harder than you think or a little more of a struggle. Is it worth
it? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
That's what I'm trying to decide.
That's what I see. It's a bit of a struggle. So in situations like that, it's kind of like you put it on the back burner and you wait for it to come around and you grab it. Or if it doesn't come around, well, then it was, pick your battles kind of thing. Remember, mm-hmm. you can only do one thing at a time. And so one thing well, and I'm as guilty as the next person. I've got two or three things on the go and then I don't end up getting anything done. So just marshal yourself and say, okay, this I can do. And this one, okay, if I can pull all my attention to it, and then it'll work. But
right.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be a bit of a struggle or a bit of an effort. We can do it, though. I can see you're perspiring and you're pulling and you're heaving, but it comes to you. So it will come. It's going to take more effort than you thought.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you. Really powerful show. That was beautiful with the last caller, too. Thank you so much for sharing.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. And wish you to stay warm. And I know you call in occasionally. Sometimes you just listen, but nice to hear your voice. So thanks for being part of the show tonight.
Thank you. God bless all of you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care, Catherine. Okay, Paul. Where are we going next, Paul?
We're taking a dive into the sunshine. We're going to Florida. We've got Allison on the line.
Hi there.
Well, I think it's about 10, almost 11 o'clock your time, so it's not so much sunshine there right now, I would guess.
Not so much. No, but we are definitely unseasonably warm and humid right now because of the cold front that's moved in through most of the country has affected Florida by creating the opposite. We have way more heat than we should.
Keeping all that warm weather down your way, not letting it sneak
right.
up here.
Correct. That's correct.
Okay.
Actually, I didn't know you were taking. I came in late tonight, so I didn't know you were taking second questions. But I love the topic about the. I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know your call screener's name, but the Ukraine thing. So I would like to chime in on that one too, if that's okay. I don't know how much time you have.
Okay. What's your point or what's your question?
Well, I'm gonna start with the simplest one first, and that is that I live in a rental house that's just been sold, and I have new owners and my lease is good until the end of April. So we will be negotiating a new rent. And I know ballpark what they want to charge, and I know ballpark what I can pay because I'm retired. You see that this is going to be a successful negotiation between me and the new owners. As a couple, well, as a married couple. It's not as a married couple.
I'm gonna say I can see that they're going to be, amenable to some sort of negotiation. They're not interested in getting new people in that might wreck the place. They're kind of looking for stability. So I think so.
Yeah.
I think it'll go your way.
It's a big dollar difference between what I can afford and what, you know, kind of that middle ground is a big dollar difference between what I can afford as a retired person and what, you know, the 30, you know, young couple with two young kids want to get.
Yeah.
So it's a big, big gap.
Yeah, I understand. But, I'm looking like, you know, it's kind of business for them. But again, the take I'm getting is that they kind of want to keep some good people and stability there. So you can go, if it's the end of April, now that's only 2 months away. So I would, go see them as soon as I can. A week or within the next week and say, you know, I know it's coming up. I really like to stay here. I really like the place. And and then if they say no, well, that gives you some time to scramble around and find another place.
Yeah, that's the worst part of it is because there is no better place. The rents up here in this area in Florida, as you well may know, Florida is just being overtaken right now by a lot of people coming from different parts, and the rents and housing prices have just, they're through the roof. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into the economics of it, but Florida is definitely, it's bursting at the seams, and the rents reflect that, and so do the mortgages.
There's always, is there other places you can go, like can you go up to Tallahassee or go northwest and
I don't have that luxury, and that's all I'm gonna say about that.
Okay. Well,
so
I can see them listening to you, and you might say something like, I'd like to stay here another year or something like that. So they know this isn't like the end game, but they might like you. The economy is going to be a great difficulty as well. So, but that's what I'd say. I'd like to stay another year or two. And anyway, they look like they'll listen to you. Is what I'm seeing. I don't know what the outcome is.
From everything I know, they want to have a renter in here. They don't want to have, because they have their own home and have a mortgage to pay. So they don't. Or more than one to pay, So they don't want to have this. They don't want to have the space empty for very long. But they also know they can get a lot more than.
Yeah, but sometimes
the middle
ground,
Yeah,
sometimes it's worth to keep somebody in the place, take a little less, and they're going to take care of the place and it's stable.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, so the other question. Oh, not question, but I understand the topic is about the Ukraine thing.
Yeah.
Is that correct? That's what the call screener said? Sorry, I missed the beginning of the show, but what were your thoughts on the whole war that may or may not happen?
Yeah, we were talking about revivals and how there's a movement forward for people now, younger people especially. They're starting to do more revivals and come together and find God and participate in these revival meetings. And the caller before, we were talking about how she was feeling really bad, and a lot of people were feeling also very bad before the earthquake hit. to the point where, including myself, people were feeling panicked. Mm-hmm. They were feeling afraid, and there was no reason for it until the earthquake struck and 40, 45,000 people lost their lives in a minute. And that terror went out around the world. And the psychic feelings, the intuitions, the clairsentient feelings all after the event stopped because the event was over. But coming up to it, people were feeling that in terrible, terrible times. And that always is the way. We're always connected mentally, spiritually.
Are you talking about the earthquake in Turkey?
We're talking about the one in Turkey. There's other earthquakes around as well. And there's people looking at in Iraq. And there are people looking in the one in, I think we're talking about the other day, in New Zealand and Australia area. More is coming, but anyway, anything else?
Well, but the earth is always moving and shifting, so I mean, earthquakes and tsunami and all those things, they've always been part of planet Earth. Nothing new under the sun, you know, so I'm not really sure what the
it's the intensity and the volume and the there's been more if you go on websites and they'll report earthquakes, there's the intensity of the on the Richter scale and the amount of them, and then you'll find I've been talking about the oceans heating up for a few years because the core of the earth is not spinning apparently now. I said it was spinning at a different speed than the crust, and that's been heating up the oceans, which has caused all the changes to the weather. So this is a time which is not normal. But it's the intensity. You know, the volcanic eruptions around the world are much more severe, and nobody's paying attention to them. There's much more volcanic dust in the air. So those are the sign of our times.
I see.
Extreme. Yeah. Sure, but
So the point is, this is all leading to the end of Earth and life on Earth.
I don't see that. I just see this time in the next 3 or 4 years as pretty severe time. That's what I'm thinking. Okay. Yeah, there'll be lots of disasters. Other people are having dreams about it. Like I said.
Okay.
If you look at, in Ukraine, there's about 35, 40,000 people dead in the last year. In Turkey, there's 45,000 people dead. That's pretty close to 100,000 people that passed away this year in one little place in the world. And there's all kinds of other parts of the world that are losing 30,000 people here, 10,000 people there. And there's more coming with the flooding and things like that. These have all been predicted, but... we got this big problem in Wyoming where there might be a volcano go off. So people are afraid, I guess, is the best way to think. But we're going to survive. Well, it's just got to get past the end of the decade. That's all.
Okay. Well,
I came in late
into the program, but.
No worries.
I came in late into the topic, but, the media really stokes the fears, and I don't play that game, but a lot of people do. So I think that's something to be considered as well.
We were talking a bit about that, and I was making the statement that if you can put your cell phone down for the day and not worry about it, then you're not addicted. But if you can't, you're addicted. So.
Well, I was just talking to several people tonight, talking about how much we hated cell phones and everyone being addicted to them. So we're not in that group, but.
Yeah. Well, the test is being able to say, I'm going to leave you on the kitchen table. I'm not going to use you all day long. I'm going to go out and live my life like I used to,
Do you remember, do you remember movies? Back in the day, like movies you know, Hollywood movies when not a single person in that movie had a cell phone. Pick a movie from, you know, 1980. Not a single person in that movie had a cell phone.
Oh, sure.
Just talk about that tonight with somebody. Yeah,
I could. I also enjoy the black and whites when you look at them, and in those old movies, everybody's smoking, okay, and everybody in every scene, everybody's smoking. So,
that's
you know
right.
the way
that's
things
right.
change, right? But anyway, Allison, thanks for being on the show. We got
all
a few more calls to take, and we're getting our time.
Oh,
but anyway,
okay.
God bless you.
Please.
Stay warm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm in
thanks,
Florida.
So. That's what I mean.
I'm
stay warm,
warm,
you know.
No, it's too warm. Too, it's,
okay,
I want
stay
the
cool.
snow. Okay, stay cool. There we go.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye
okay.
now.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, Doug, don't you wish you were in Florida right about now, or are we okay? You've got a beautiful setting there. I'm not trying to give everybody the wrong idea here. It's just like 17 below is pretty cool.
I
That's the kind
actually of, agree with you. I enjoy the changing seasons, and I enjoy winter, and I enjoy spring because that's the rebirth and is the anticipation of summer, and I enjoy fall. I enjoy the colors and the anticipation of Christmas, and so I enjoy the seasons and make the best of all of them.
Well, I'm not going to complain. Nobody listens anyway, as they say, right? I'm just sending a text off to my daughter here.
Are you using your phone?
Pardon?
Are you using your phone?
Of course.
Well, I want to get back to the time when we had one on the wall, and that's all we needed.
Well, I do have one on the wall now.
Okay.
It's his cell phone. It's he mounted on the wall.
Yeah, there you go, Doug. when the grandkids were little, I would tease them, and I have a big round of about 14 inches in diameter, round clock, and the numbers are in Roman numerals, and I would say, do you know what time that is? And they wouldn't have a clue. So eventually we got around to a digital phone that, or some sort of, you know, like on an appliance, and it would have 1:15, or, you know, 15. And so they got to see 1:15, and they could look at the round clock on the wall. And then I went through the idea of every, you know, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, the hour hand, the big hand, the little hand. And now they can do it. And I think the granddaughter actually in school, went up and learned or asked the teacher how to, the teacher would teach her how to write, not print, but how to write. So she actually had to ask on how to take lessons on how to do writing. And I was shocked. And I said, they don't teach writing anymore. And then I thought, well, why would they? Nobody writes anymore. And that's not true exactly, but you know, you dictate into your cell phone, you're typing in, you've got your thumbs are there, are your, you know, your communicating devices. Now everybody's going to, the future's going to have corporal thumb syndrome or something, after something like that. But it was like, wow, the things change. But it starts with, you know, like a round clock. I mean, when we talk about how many people are out there when we say transistor radio, do they know what that means? Or VHS, you know, tape recordings and stuff. So it's a sign of times. And but I mean, my friend Robert would be here, and we start off with those commercial jingles, ho ho ho, and then you're supposed to say, in the valley of the Jolly Green Giant, or Maxwell, good to the last drop. That was a coffee commercial. So when he'd be telling us, would say these things, if there was anybody younger, they'd look at him like, you're crazy.
Humans have a short memory. They really do.
Everybody has a short memory? Or human nature?
I'm talking human nature. Human nature, yes.
Oh, sure.
I just want to make a comment on the script. cursive, they call it. I use cursive all the time, and if there's something confidential, I can write it down, and because of my scrawl, they can't read it. I'm the only one who can read it, so I don't have to hide things.
You must be a doctor. Oh my gosh! Very good for you, Doug. So look, Paul, it looks like we've managed to connect with everybody. We've got all the callers tonight, and we're just a little past 11. So why don't we call it a night?
Very good. Good show.
Okay.
Good.
Any last, man, that last comment there, Paul?
I think that we're going to see an uptick with revivals, Douglas. I think that Asbury, according to what I've just seen looking around on the internet and on YouTube, there's a whole lot of comment about this revival at that one university in Kentucky. And I think they've started something. They've revived revivals. So it's going to be interesting to see where all of that goes. I think it's positive, and we're going to see more.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right, because there's a need.
Mm-hmm.
People need us for the same reasons I've outlined in the show tonight,
yep.
Why it's necessary to come together. And, we'll keep on coming, and we'll be putting forward our Hope conferences, where we have people coming to our weekends. The next one coming up in a few weeks will be in Phoenix, Arizona, and then there's plans to go to Los Angeles and Florida and other places as the opportunities pop up. And we just might start our own revival show as having the conference as well, but time will tell. I think the world needs a coming together. And I sure hope that if the Chinese can help the Russians find a way of saving face and having peace in Ukraine, I don't care what the politics are. I only care that the peace comes, and we'll ask God to show the way to maybe stop the constant separation and the constant derogatory treating of each other. And that might give us hope for around the world as well. Wherever you are out there, my friends, you know, God is everywhere. Nothing is impossible for God. Last word, Doug.
I think that, you know, just to talk around the issue of revivals, I think in this time of great change and so much fear, it's important for people to find true spirituality wherever they can. And if revivals offer them an opportunity to reconnect with God, to revive their heart, then by all means, I think that it is something that will happen in greater abundance. And also other avenues, red venues will pop up as well. Because I remember a story and said, someone who was in at Dunkirk during the Second World War, when the British Expeditionary Force was trapped against the sea by the Germans, and this person said there were no atheists in Dunkirk when we were there. They all prayed fervently.
Yeah,
and
there
so
we go.
In this time in which we are facing increasing challenges on all levels, it's my great hope, and I expect that people, more and more people, will turn to God, which is
okay.
A good thing in the long run, for sure, always.
Paul, why don't you take us out with that commercial on our Hope conferences coming up, and we'll say good night to everyone. And, you know, this is our new improved program on our platform tonight. We apologize for any difficulties in the production of the same, but I want to thank Doug for being the co-host tonight and helping out as usual, but also for Paul, who's working behind the scenes here, and he's making this program work for us and doing a wonderful job. And I want to thank you very much for producing the show, Paul. Wonderful tonight.
Hear, hear.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you both. And for our listeners, just if you hear Fort Worth, just think Phoenix, Arizona instead.
There you go. Because we were in Fort Worth already. That's right.
That's right. Okay. It was a great conference. All right. Well, thank you both. And thank you to all of our listeners. We'll be happy to talk to you all again next Friday night.
Come to the first Hope Conference with Dr. Douglas James Cottrell in Fort Worth, Texas, February 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Best Western Plus Conference Center. 3 days of spiritual enlightenment with personal interactions with Dr. Douglas and guest speakers in open forum lectures and workshops. Virtue healing, angels, near-death experiences, interpreting your dreams, the DNA of your soul are just several of the topics being presented. Special room rates are available for conference guests. Register now at www.douglasjamescottrell.com and see a full breakdown of the conference curriculum, plus plenty of opportunities to mingle with fellow seekers who have a goal of making the world a better place. The Hope Conference, February 10th, 11th, and 12th in Fort Worth. See DouglasJamesCottrell.com for details and registration. Thanks for listening to the Global Village International Online Radio Show with your host, Dr. Douglas James Cottrell, and co-host, Doug Bentley. Brought to you by MindProbe Publications and Productions, a division of Douglas James Cottrell and Associates Incorporated. Copyright 2022, Douglas James Cottrell. No part of this broadcast audio may be reproduced in whole or in part without express written permission.